That's Poncho Sanchez with Afro-Cuban Fantasy. With Poncho, of course, being on congas, he's a fantastic percussionist, a master conguero. Sal Cracciolo on trumpet, Ramon Banda on timbales and drums, Francisco Torres on trombone, Scott Martin on saxophone and flute, Jose Papo Rodriguez on bongos, and David Torres on piano, with Tony Banda on bass. This is Utrecht Lead. I almost forgot my name. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrecht Lead. It's Thursday, October the 3rd, the third day of that, what we will now refer to as the government shutdown hyphen Obamacare hyphen soon-to-be debt ceiling debacle. And it's funny that listening to the previous guest, Ronnie Cummins, with Gary Null, he said something that actually was the title of my talk today, A Clarion Call to Action. If the situation in Washington doesn't confirm for us the inherent dangers and limitations of the two-party system, nothing else will. Every effort is being made to convince us that what we are witnessing is democracy in action, when in fact, it is a bloodfest among predators, and they're fighting over who gets the choicest part of the kill, and the kill, that's us. They have marked us for a long time, just like a predator. You see how the tiger or the lion just sneaks up on the prey. They've been watching you. They know you. They know our habits very, very well. And they're actually correct. They know us so well that they can do this kind of nonsense with the confidence that what we will do is just grumble. And we'll, you know, make a little fuss, we'll talk loudly, we'll cuss and carry on, but in the end, we will return to the same two-party system. And we won't do very much in the way of action. We're just going to talk. But now is a time for all good people to come to the aid of new parties, or the parties that are not Democratic and Republican. That's it. This is the time to do it. Today the president is in Maryland. He is talking about the bad, nasty, mean old Republicans and how they're holding things up. They're being reckless. They're being obstinate. And they're being completely, they're hijacking America with their awful, bad behavior. And then you hear the Republicans say the exact same thing. This president is stubborn. This president has a mind that he is the reincarnation of some absolute monarch, and he intends not to heed either the spirit or the letter of the law, which says that governing is an inclusive process. Isn't that odd? Finally, there's affirmative action in the White House. And the man in the White House is practicing exclusion. How about that? But in fact, a pox on both their houses. Because neither of these parties serves anybody well at this point, really. I remind you of a very interesting thing. Back in 2010, Nancy Pelosi was addressing the legislative conference of the National Association of Counties. She was House Speaker then. And people were bristling even then, because this was now the apex of the rush to pass the Obamacare legislation. And she's telling these people, I mean, these are office holders, these are people in government, these are heads of counties. She tells them, and I quote, "We have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it." I didn't make that up. We have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it. And that's exactly the whole point right here. They passed a bill, and they felt the need to pass the bill so that we could then, post facto, after it's all done, then you could find out what's in it. And she's telling this to political leaders, let alone, you know, the mere mortals like us. This is the attitude of the Democratic Party. This is the attitude of the Republican Party. They're both the same. But imagine that. When the House Speaker could say in 2010, at a point where everybody wanted to know what the heck is happening with this great reform, and the person who is the Democratic leader in the House says, in effect, to other elected officials, look, I can't tell you what it is. We have to pass it first, and then we'll tell you what's in the bill. Now, this provides an interesting context for how we are to regard the situation. This is and has been a stick-up. This is a mugging. The people have been mugged. This bill was rammed through Congress in the wee hours of the morning, and with all kinds of things packed in it that we still have yet to discover. It's 2,700 pages. And guess what? It doesn't stop there. As I speak now, the bill is more than 7 feet high. You understand what I'm measuring it in feet. The bill is more than 7 feet high. It's got more than 33,000 pages of regulations. 159 new governmental agencies have been formed, and boards and programs to basically enforce this bill. But it is more than 7 feet tall, lined up against the wall. And still, the mantra is from the Democrats, from the president, trust that we know what's best for you. Trust me when I tell you that this is a good thing. Right here, I should mention, by the way, on Monday, you don't want to miss Monday's show. You don't want to miss it. You should mark that in your calendar. It is going to blow your mind. How we got this bill, how we got this law. And then the president goes on to tell people, look, I have the stamp of approval of the U.S. Supreme Court. And just this morning, I was talking with a friend of mine who was reminding me of the same thing. This bill has met the smell test of the U.S. Supreme Court. I had to remind him, you know, I have a slight history. A slight familiarity with the U.S. Supreme Court. We just saw this year what the U.S. Supreme Court did to the Voting Rights Act. That was the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court at one point said that black folks were not even folks. We were chattel. In fact, and it got generous and said then we were 3/5 of a person. All this was the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court was in favor of segregation. The U.S. Supreme Court said that black folks never, ever are to be citizens. It never was intended that you would be citizens. And even today, all of these fights that we're having as African Americans has to do with the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court ruling determined our status a long time ago. So when people talk about the U.S. Supreme Court has said so and so and so, it is very ironic that an African-American president would be talking about the U.S. Supreme Court, and not only as an African-American, he's a lawyer, he ought to have a history about the U.S. Supreme Court, a cultural history of the U.S. Supreme Court and its decisions. It's far from supreme. The issue I want to take into a wider direction today, because I think we've discussed and laid out already that there is to be great concern. There's great concern here, and there are questions to be asked. And I have been broaching the subject in terms of the relationship between those who govern and those who are governed. I've been talking about it within the context of how we define this thing called democracy. And I've defined it for purposes of my discussions and presentations as an expression of the degree to which people have relatively and reasonably decent access to the throttle and brake of government. And we see that we don't have access to the throttle or the brake of government here. You remember one time, it was not too long ago, I did a story about my cab ride from hell, in which I found myself in the back seat, of course, of a taxi being driven most erratically by a cab driver. And I likened it to our relationship with government. There am I in the back seat of this car being driven really crazily on a highway. I do not have access to the throttle and brake of the car and the wheel. I can't handle anything. I can't set this right. And that's the way we are as citizens. We are in the back seat of a taxi being driven by a nut. And it seems that, or several nuts, and it seems we have no way of influencing what they do next. All we know is that we are in the same vehicle, and we are hurtling down this highway at the speed they desire and driving however they choose to drive. That's the parody here. The average person at this point in the United States should have a sense of uneasiness about this process. And whether you sign up or you don't sign up, that's not the issue. The issue is this particular president has done something unprecedented. Now, sometimes breaking precedents is a good thing. But what this president has done in an unprecedented way is move the power and authority of government even farther away from popular controls. It has become now a very dictatorial, very dictatorial state. And this is what makes me feel mournful and feel sorry and sad, because when this young man presented himself to be carried into office as qualified to do so, and the leadership said, they blessed him and said, this is the guy. hopeful person, man, well educated and all that stuff, the talk. And he was lifted into office. And then to see essentially his consistent expression of disdain for people and inclusion. I suppose part of it is that he went to Harvard, you see, and he was the first African-American editor of the Harvard Law Review. Ooh, that's big stuff. And therefore, he's a smart man. And therefore, he's a tactician. He's a legal tactician and strategist. And he can make a way where there's no way. And the dirty work that had been formulated by the Clintons was handed to him. And he took on the assignment as their acolyte. And slavishly, and I use that word intentionally, and slavishly has carried out their program to the detriment even of his own constituencies, the people who put him there. When he has changed the nature, no president so far, not even the right-wingiest of the right wing, has brought the nature of governance to this point. He has done it. He has vaulted over that hurdle and delivered what really presidents have privately wanted, some of them, awesome power to compel you to feel directly the power of the state. And he has altered for all time, because it has begun on his watch, he has altered the nature of government. The citizen is the servant of the state. That's my big grief with Barack Obama with respect to this particular situation. It isn't even about the health care and whatnot. We know that that's a huge issue. But what we need to pay attention to is that this man is the agent of serious coercion and oppression of the state. The state, under Barack Obama, he has ushered in a new era. The state is powerful, more powerful. It cannot even be checked, not even by equals in Congress. He has elevated it so that the presidency, the state, the head of state, is now powerful, more powerful than anybody else. I can force you, the state can force you to do something that you previously, you heretofore thought was optional, your choice, your democratic choice. It can compel you to obey it, even when it is wrong, even when it is overreaching, even when it has no right. And the entire nation is busy deciding how they are going to comply. This is a monumental achievement. And we can't dismiss it. Yes, it's Obamacare and all the stuff. It's about the health care. We understand all of that. But dig deeper and you see what this really is. And the pity is that he was selected to do this and agreed to be selected to do it, agreed to be the acolyte, agreed to be the agent of this dramatic shift in the power and authority of government. So, it is a Democrat who has ushered in the era of totalitarianism. This is what this is. Just this morning, I was talking to my friend, and we were commiserating on the fact that for most African Americans, even with help, the cost of this program is going to eat into their income, if they are lucky to have an income. This is happening. See, this is part of what feeds into it, and I have to make it clear. I have to make it clear. This so-called African-American president is making this shift precisely at the time when African-Americans are experiencing unemployment like no time in recent memory. All the way back, you have to go all the way back to the 1920s. The level of unemployment in African-American communities is higher than it was in the 1920s under an African-American president. Schools are being shut down in black communities, 5,000 of them to be shut down under this African-American president. We have seen no comprehensive approach to affordable housing under this African-American president. We have seen an explosion in the incarceration of young black men under this African-American president, and an absolute distortion in sentencing under an African-American president. So while all of this is going on, it is the African-American leadership that is most quiet. You expect them to say, hey, wait a minute here. What is in this bill? Never mind Nancy Pelosi that says we've got a signed bill and we've got to approve the bill to find out what's in it. This thing is going to have enormous impact in our communities and all communities that are struggling. They're not saying a word. They've been brought in line. And here's the truth. The truth is, it is not even Barack Obama's power. It doesn't even belong to him. He is not the powerful one. He is reporting to the power. He is executing a program in service of the power, but he is not the power. He is its agent. And every single member of the Congressional Black Caucus who suffered the indignity of having to wait 790 days before this president saw fit to actually meet with them, and then for a mere 90 minutes, they're all in line because they understand they don't have to fear him. They have to fear the power that controls him. So they say nothing. Their communities are being slaughtered. This bill really should be called the Roach Motel health care bill. You get in, but you can't get out. But pay attention. Let it be noted that the fight here, the real fight, this is what the Republicans have always wanted done, and they're satisfied that he has done it. They're not satisfied that he has locked them out completely. They're all of the same mind. They've always wanted this kind of power. They're all of the same type. But he did it faster and smoother because he had extraordinary help. You know, in the first instance, we had this measure come before the Supreme Court, yes, which included Supreme Court justices appointed by Clinton. Yeah, I know people dismiss this stuff and they say, well, what do you have with the Clintons? Why are you all? Because this is it. This is the story. This is where this comes. And I want to remind you, this healthcare reform, as they're calling it, is reform only as it relates on the consumer side, or they're going to reform you. There's no reform really going on the administrative and business side, because that is 1/6 of the U.S. economy. That's big money. Just one area, big money. And that's why the Clintons went after it. It's big money. Wherever they go, their interest first is money. How do I make money? The Democrats, ideologically, are no different from the Republicans. But believe it or not, the irony is the Republicans in this situation are actually they're actually looking like model citizens compared to the Democrats. They're looking like principled people. All of a sudden, they like the idea of the U.S. Constitution and what should be done and what should not be done. So the task is now not to deal with the situation as it is, but to remember what it is. You can't forget what this is. And this is not about Obamacare. This is about the state having legal right and permission from the highest court in the country to do as it pleases. It has been legitimized to take that leap. What are we going to do? What is this supposed to mean for the vast majority? My suggestion is that we are to interpret this as a clarion call to action. We heard that from the previous guest, and we didn't have a conversation before this program. A call to action. The first call to action is to form your own parties. Get out of both of these parties. They have ceased to be useful. They're now predatory, seriously predatory. Their health will cost you yours. Look for ways to affiliate with something or some group that can adequately represent you and can adequately go about the process of change in a meaningful way. Create change. And look around for places where change is possible and where you can contribute to that change. This should be the definitive movement away from two-party politics, away from business-as-usual politics. This should be the landmark. This is what it should be remembered for. The exodus of people from this ridiculous two-party system that is absolutely useless, as we can see. This is predatory government. And we have to thank an African-American president, the first African-American. We have to thank him for this. The party must be punished severely. And the first way to do it is to get out of it. Let it die. Let it wither and die. It is of no use to you. Republican, Democrat, they're both wings of a flightless bird. Leave them alone. And insist that they leave you alone and construct your own response. People are timid. They are caving before the power of the state, and they understand it. I get it. The state has awesome power. And the point I'm making here is this African-American president has taken this power to exponential heights. And use this as a nice little agency through which he could accomplish that mission. But make no mistake, as of this moment in time, the nature of government definitively has changed. You'd be crazy not to change accordingly. Your political options, your political choices should be different. Your political will should be different. Your political views should be different. Your political allegiances should be different as of this moment in time. Because you really have to see yourself as situated right at the forefront or the vanguard of the exodus. Because what is happening now under this government, under this new feel of government, is meant to have generational impact. This is a long-term thing. This isn't for now. These things are long-term. What Barack Obama has done under the guise of this reform is a change, a sea change in the nature and authority of government that even ultra-right Republicans and Democrats have been trying to do for a long time. He has returned this to the Dixiecrat days. The Democratic Party will now tell you what to do. You can't dismiss this as incidental. This is huge. It is far more important than any piece of legislation, this Obama thing, pales in comparison to this very thing, the changing of the nature of government, the changing of the nature of the contract that people believe they have between the contract that supposedly exists between government and the governed, the right in a so-called democracy to have access to the throttle and brake. When you say go, it goes. When you say stop, it stops. This says the hell with you. You don't decide anything. Your job is to show up when we tell you to show up and pull that lever and then go home. Get out of the way until we have need for you. And if we're in trouble, we call up your people. We call up Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. The paragons of ethics and morality. They'll come and they will speak to you because, you know, they'll talk black talk. And we'll have the fawning whites who will speak to the whites, and the Latinos who will speak to other Latinos, and convince them that the Democratic Party is not the Dixiecrat Party of the South, not the segregationist party. It is the party of the future. It is inclusive. You notice in the past couple of days, as the president has made his rounds, he apparently found a GPS system. He's finding the black community. This is really incredible. Today he found the Latino community. That's really nice. His GPS system is working. This man would come to Florida, South Florida, with the largest population of African Americans in the entire state. He can't find the black community. He can't find, for a while, he couldn't find Chicago. But Mrs. Obama found Chicago, and she went to Chicago to announce that she was going to raise money to abate the violence and build basketball courts. The same day that the city started the process of closing 50 schools in Chicago. I'm going to take a break right now, and you can talk, we can all talk, at 888-874-4888. The thing is, remember, the shift has occurred, and this man is responsible for that shift. Amen.
This is Mike Fader, host of The Turning Point and Occupied Territory, and you're listening to PRN.FM, your very best source for progressive programming.
This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. What are your thoughts? This is a time that the grassroots need to be energized about political action, and this is a time that we ought to be seeing an earnest effort at genuine coalition building. This is the time. This is the time. Don't wait. This is the time, and we need to get really busy about building our political, or rebuilding, reconstructing our political bases. This is it. We've been served notice, and we'd be crazy to ignore the imperative to retreat from participation in this messed up political system. It's absolutely messed up with a capital F. Get out of it. And as they say, they deserve to be put out of our misery. 888-874-4888. We'll be doing this, just so you know. I want you to mark your calendars for Monday. We're going to have a very special discussion Monday about the constitutionality of many decisions made within the context of Obamacare, and it is going to be coming from an extraordinary source. So I hope you would tune in for that and tell others about it. It would be a very enlightening presentation that we'll be having on Monday. Of course, we have enlightening presentations every day and enlightening discussions every day as we exchange information with each other. But it's time to be shocked out of the malaise, you know. We are far too contented, we're far too silent, and we need to up the ante on political entities that do have some degree of relevance, but they too are falling, you know, into the trap. They're following the same, you know, disturbingly, they're following the same kind of behavior as the majors. They're showing up just at election time. But we need to energize them. Tell them, hey, this is a time you need to be ever present in communities that are hurting and that can reasonably be approached to hear your message. But you're not there. We're not seeing you. We're not hearing you. So this is why we need to form our own parties, whatever it is that you can organize around, do it, because you now have leverage. And this is a stunning thing. The people who are most affected don't see that they have also the most leverage. There is a reason there's such a concentration on, let's get these African Americans and Latinos, get them in, they gotta get in. A huge push in these communities. Michael from New Jersey, hello.
Hi, you, Trish. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Same here.
It's well, you've created a lot of anxiety in me with your talking.
I hope it's a good thing. anxiety.
I mean, it's a crisis, you know.
Yes.
And it's a crisis we're all facing. And you know, I felt this crisis, you know, all along. That, you know, way back when four kids were shot in Kent State, the power of the state as something, you know, something apart from the people that's mm-hmm. going to, you know, take up a gun and shoot a kid on the campus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was the most shocking thing to me in the Vietnam War, so I'm dating myself. but we've lived all through all that, you know? And now with this surveillance and the state spying and, the, you know, maybe read this morning in the Times of this fellow who built up a business to make secure emails for people, and the FBI came in and just, you know, took everything away. He said, no, you can't mm-hmm. do this. So the state is basically saying what kind of businesses can exist and what can't, and they're going to say who can, you know, where the money is going to go, and where they, you know, there's going to be these areas of pockets of the economy where there is absolutely no competition. And we're just going to flood those sectors with money. And you don't have to worry about competition because there isn't going to be, like in the healthcare field, there won't be any competition because, you know, the government and the private sector are one thing. And there's nobody to compete. You know, you're licensed and you're protected and nobody can compete with you. It's a monopoly. Mm-hmm. And yet you can make huge profits.
It's state-sponsored monopoly. I mean, this is what we need to understand about this moment that we're in. This is the historicity of it, that you have a definitive, you know, going over the hurdle now. Obama has taken us over the fence, you know. There used to be a hesitancy, and that's perhaps why it took so long, you know, you from your timeline that you're drawing today, you can see how it started to percolate. But there was a resistance because, you know, people didn't want to be so overt about it. But now it's in your face.
Yeah. So they're able to call the shots and say, you know, what segments, you know, can prosper and what segments should remain oppressed and in poverty. And, of course, you know, that's a growing segment. And as they are now taxing people into a system, like you say, the Roach Motel that you can go in and you can't get out, this is now it's, you know, now you have no say. You can't, you know, there's no way out. If you're a human being, you're in.
Right. And if you get out, they still have you.
They have you, and you're in, and you're under our auspices.
Right.
And we say what goes. So yet people are profiting from this. This is not a public program. This is not the welfare state, which I believe in, as you know.
Yes.
That should be strengthened and expanded. And this would be the people, okay? A true welfare state, a true good society would be no separation between the state and the people. That would be the ideal. It was the country was set up. We the people, not 3/5 of a person, not a half a person, not a chattel, but you know, we the people, all of us. So there would be no separation. So that would be the good society, and it would require a welfare state, because you can't direct certain, industries and segments that to control the power and control the government and have this incestuous relationship between business and have one person worth $30 billion, become the mayor. I mean, this social morality that we have is completely immoral, and we accept it, and human beings have to understand, why there is this division, this fragmentation, not only out there. What we see out in the world is a reflection from our psychological state of a fragmented consciousness. The me, the you, the us, and the they, and all these divisions, the myriad divisions. And this is reflected in society. So unless we go deep into the psyche of the human being and understand what is his relationship to people, things, and ideas, and if there's a revolution in that relationship, then there'll be a revolution in society. But if we go with this fragmented relationship, this fragmented consciousness, this individual egocentric consciousness, and try to make changes, they won't be real changes. We'll just set up another system with the same divisions.
You're right.
This is what I see. I mean,
but thank you. But we still must move. We can't remain idle. We have to move. There's a sense here
yes.
of urgency. Yes,
absolutely. Because we're being, we're being submerged now in this unconsciousness. We have to respond to it.
Thanks, Michael, for your call today. Thank you. Jack from New Jersey. Hello.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hello, Jack.
I understand what you're saying, and you're right on point there. I think that this is really coming down to an exhibition from the Southern leadership, really, about how angry they are that Obama is such a really good conservative president. He's like Bush and blackface. And I believe this is what they're angry about. Not anything to do with Obamacare, not helping the people. If I remember correctly, it was a Christian writer a long time ago who said that they want to get people into the office so that they can control those offices. And they were kind of affiliated with the Ku Klux Klan and the John Birch Society. And they did that. And now, since they have control over so many agencies, it's more to me like a stimulus response thing. In terms of stimulus, it's either positive or negative. It was positive stimulus was the Citizens United, and that says that we'll give unlimited money to you if you do what we want. And I look at, Clarence Thomas and his wife. And then this negative response, negative stimulus, and that's like the National Security Agency saying that we know everything about you, and if we don't do what we want, we will hurt you. So I still think they're in control. But when Obama came in, his job was to continue the Bush legacy. I think Henry Kissinger said something on the Internet saying that he was the best person that Kissinger knew of to bring about the New World Order. And to me, that reminds me of John Henry Clark. John Henry Clark in one of his books said that when the Europeans came to Africa, they couldn't go into Africa because of the climate and the jungle, et cetera. So they hired other blacks to go into the jungle and capture people and bring them out to the coastline where they were handed over into slavery. This is really what I see, no offense to no one, but the end result of what is being done by the Department of Justice, by the executive branch, and by the judiciary, the minorities in those areas, they seem to be going into, in a figurative way of speaking, going into the communities and taking out the people in those communities and leading them into political slavery, economic slavery, social slavery perhaps, but more political and economic. So I understand what you're saying. I really don't understand about this healthcare law, because not all the states are involved in it. And since it passed the Supreme Court, if the people who have a Republican governor are not allowed to participate, will they still have to pay a fine? And if they have to pay a fine, is that constitutional? Because they were prohibited from getting the best deals. They only have to go maybe with one person or one government agency or something. But since it's not participated among everybody on an equal basis, how can that be constitutional? And I just
well, it can be because under the accepted law, as it is, that the states, in some cases, supersede decisions by the federal government. They can have choices in some matters that even the federal government cannot enforce. This is the notion of states' rights.
That's
so some
correct.
States but are saying we don't want to be involved in it because they have a handle on it. They've controlled their districts. You see, they've controlled their borders, and in some states they refuse it because they have some questions about it. They see what's going on. They see the implications, and they just don't think it's good law.
They'll still have to pay a fine to the government. Over something that they have no control over. And I don't know if that would be constitutional or not. They don't have an opportunity to participate and be in accordance with the law. So
mm-hmm. So we'll be hearing about this on Monday. This is a very good question on Monday. It's a very, very good question.
Thank you.
But let me ask you, in recognition of all of this, are you satisfied with the response that you're getting from your representatives?
You know, they're out for themselves. They're following the law of self-interest. I say that as a citizen, if I really had the power to change anything, I would get rid of Citizens United, and I would get rid of the information that the National Security Agency has, because then I could really think about someone expressing how they really feel. With those two aspects in control of the society, everyone's under the control of people who wield the power from those agencies.
And well, so we have to leave it there, I'm afraid, Jack. We're out of time. Thank you so very much for calling, and thank you, Michael, as well, for your call today. We will be returning, and we're not leaving this discussion because, of course, it continues. The debacle continues. And, of course, as the October 17th debt ceiling fight looms, we can't get away from it. But thank you so much. Let's get together again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Tell everybody you know. Bye-bye.